Recently, we had Dr. David Agus on the program to talk about his book, The End of Illness, about his approach to healthy living, a book endorsed by people like Al Gore and Lance Armstrong. But one thing Dr. Agus said in his initial appearance drew some raised eyebrows that inspired the deeper look we're about to take about the dangers of vitamins. Yes, he said dangers. I asked if that should lead to a vitamin backlash.
I wouldn't say a vitamin backlash, but I think a reality check is I want to look at everything and say, where's the data? 39,000 women studied over a period of 19 years. Women who took multivitamins or iron had a higher death rate of women who didn't. Men who take vitamin E for 3 years have 17% higher prostate cancer.
And that got a lot of response, and we thought we would follow up Dr. David Agus there on our show on Leap Day, February 29th this year. This is a hard follow-up to do because vitamin believers and skeptics are often dug into their camps, with neither quite believing the studies that do come out showing positive effects, no effects, or danger. But we thought we would try to take a slice of it and compare the views of two practitioners on a daily multivitamin and a couple of specifics. So back with us again is David Agus, MD, professor of medicine and engineering at the University of Southern California and author of The End of Illness. Dr. Agus, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Brian. Great to be here.
And Jeffrey Blumberg, PhD, professor at the Tufts University School of Nutrition Science and Policy, more of a believer in the benefits of vitamins and supplements. Dr. Blumberg, thank you for doing this.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Dr. Agus, a Centers for Disease Control study just out this spring finds about 10% of the U.S. population has deficiencies in vitamin B6, D, and iron. Also, men were at risk for vitamin C deficiencies more than women, and seniors were at increased risk of vitamin B6 or B12 deficiency. And that's the CDC. That's not a vitamin manufacturer or an alternative health guru. What do you make of that?
You know, I mean, all too often we rely on a number rather than a manifestation. So saying someone has a low vitamin D level, I want data that matters. And so there's data of correlation, but there's no causative data. And so we also saw last week the data coming out that 24,000 people studied in Europe for 11 years who took calcium had a higher chance of heart disease. And so we see over and over these declaratory statements, well, we're low in this. Well, unless there's a manifestation, I don't want people taking pills. I want them to eat right.
Dr. Blumberg, do you have a practice as a nutritionist, and do you recommend a daily multivitamin for most people?
No, I do not have a clinical practice because I'm not a clinician. I'm a professor of nutrition science and policy, and I've been doing research on vitamins for the last 30 years.
So let's start on that idea of a daily multivitamin. I know you've said that lots of Americans fall short of calcium, potassium, vitamin D, and vitamin E. Plus, there were those CDC stats that I just read that are new. Do you think those are good reasons in general for most Americans, and given our diets, to take a preventive multivitamin?
Well, I think it's a prudent thing to do, but I would certainly agree with Dr. Agus that we need to be eating better than we do. The reason we have such a shortfall in the intake of essential vitamins and minerals is that our diet is terrible. This is one reason we have an epidemic of overweight and obesity. It's not because we're eating lots of nutrient-rich foods. It's because our diet is actually pretty lousy. And so when I say a multivitamin is a prudent choice to make, I think for most all Americans, I do want to be clear in saying that dietary supplements like multivitamins are just what they say they are. They're supplements to a diet. They are certainly not a substitute for a healthy diet. No supplement is going to make a bad diet better. But it will help to help you meet the requirement that we have for these essential nutrients.
And Dr. Agus, I think the two of you will agree on that one point of common ground, that Americans are not eating the way we should in general. You write in your book that unless we have scurvy or vitamin D deficiency disease or some other specific condition, there's no need to take a regular multivitamin. But I see you're a Michael Pollan fan, And you also agree with him, as well as with Dr. Blumberg, that the junky diets Americans eat are too devoid of nutrients. So if the average American is missing nutrients, why wouldn't rounding out with a daily supplement be beneficial or at least not harmful?
Well, let's take two steps. One is, in terms of devoid of nutrients, our food has nutrients. Dr. Blumberg is totally right. We're eating the wrong things, which is causing obesity. We're eating lots of concentrated sugar, lots of bad fats. We're eating all day instead of at regular mealtimes, et cetera, et cetera. But we've got plenty of nutrients in our food. This notion that food today doesn't have any nutrients isn't really right. Second is that look at the data. Again, multivitamins are very large concentrations of vitamins in different forms, many times, than are available in foods, and they're a bolus. We don't have data that taking them as a bolus in a pill have a long-term benefit. In fact, there have been 63 studies done, looked at by the government, randomized with placebo and multivitamin, none of which have shown a benefit in preventing disease. So I'm just saying, listen, look at the data, and if there really hasn't been a randomized study to show a benefit, most times in medicine, when we make these guesses, is we think they're going to be helpful, we're wrong.
Dr. Blumberg, do you think there are good scientific randomized studies that show population benefits from taking a daily multivitamin?
Well, there have been a great many. I mean, we know that that women of childbearing age who take a multivitamin containing folic acid have a significantly reduced risk of babies with neural tube birth defects and some other kinds of birth defects
as well.
You're
totally right. That's an exception, and I totally agree with pregnant women, but not the general population.
Well, one of the problems with pregnant women taking a multivitamin is that it's too late to prevent neural tube birth defects by the time they become aware that they're pregnant, which is usually at least 2 or 3 months into the pregnancy. And neural tube birth defects, which can be prevented by folic acid, have to be present at the time of conception and during those first couple months of pregnancy. So it's really too late, at least for that purpose. But there are certainly other randomized clinical trials with calcium and vitamin D showing a reduced risk for osteoporosis and bone fractures.
I disagree on that one. I mean, the Nurses' Health study was a randomized study with calcium and vitamin D that showed no benefit in terms of bone fractures.
The Nurses' Health Study is a prospective cohort. It's not a randomized clinical trial.
Hang on. I don't want to get lost in the public health lingo weeds. Let me just step back one step, but stay on that point. Because when you talk about these big studies, I want to come back to the one that Dr. Agus mentioned in the clip on the original show that sounded so worrisome or inflammatory, take your pick. He talked about the study that included 39,000 women studied over a period of 19 years. Women who took multivitamins or iron in the study had actually a higher death rate compared with women who did. These were mostly older women. And I've read about that study, Dr. Blumberg, I guess, that came out last fall. What do you make of that? What should the general public make of something like that?
Well, I think one problem, that was also an observational study. I assume we're talking about the Iowa Women's Health Study in this particular one. And first of all, it was not that women who took, these were older women who took a multivitamin, had a higher mortality than women who didn't. It was, there was no placebo control. They were comparing it against women who took other supplements or no supplements.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very oddly designed study, but even if you accept those results, the literature on this, the number of randomized clinical trials, the number of observational studies, there are several, and they are not consistent with one another. Some show a potential for harm, some show a potential for benefit, and some show a null outcome. I think one of the differences that Dr. Agus and I may have is that I don't necessarily feel that the evidence is very strong that multivitamins will prevent heart disease and cancer and eye disease and kidney disease or whatever. They are a way, however, to help you meet the requirement that you have today in your diet to consume these nutrients, vitamin C, vitamin E, are essential nutrients. We must get a certain amount of them, and yet when we look at what people are eating, we know that they are not meeting those requirements through their diet. I think they should, but they're not. If we look at what the Dietary Guidelines for Americans recommend in terms of what we should be eating, in terms of fruits and vegetables and whole grains and fiber and so on, I think those are really very good recommendations. The fact is that only 3% of Americans actually eat that way. And at least as you're trying to change your diet to become more healthful, and I think that's a good recommendation for almost everybody, I think taking a multivitamin every day, at least to ensure that there's no shortfall in these essential nutrients, is valuable. Mm-hmm. It helps your body function, even if it doesn't necessarily prevent major devastating chronic diseases like cancer.
We are getting two views on the usefulness of vitamins and other supplements from David Agus, MD, and Jeffrey Blumberg, PhD, one doctor, one nutritionist, Blumberg from Tufts, and Agus from USC, and author of the book, The End of Illness. And listeners, we are going to open up the phones. As I said earlier, we can't compare every supplement here. We've been talking about multis so far, and we're going to go on to some other particulars, talk about vitamin C, vitamin E, maybe some other things. But our guests will answer some specific questions that you have on supplements that you wonder about spending money on or are convinced are working wonders for you or however you want to raise it. So feel free to call in with your specific questions, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can post your question or comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So Dr. Agus, in your book, you write that vitamin C might help prevent cancer, but it might become an archenemy when you have cancer because tumors like vitamin C. Is there good evidence for either?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so I cloned a vitamin C transporter in 1997 and showed that tumors like vitamin C take gobs of it. The other side is that there's a study down out of the National Institute of Health showing that if you take high-dose vitamin C, you actually increase the rate of DNA damage. And so when we look at these again, I don't disagree with anything Dr. Blumberg says, but I do disagree with the statement, well, you should just take it because in case you don't get enough. My argument is unless there's data that it's beneficial or there's data that having a lower amount in your diet has a negative effect, which we don't have that data, then I wouldn't do it. And so that goes for vitamin C, vitamin E. The vitamin E study that just came out was a $250 million study by the government showing an increased incidence of prostate cancer after 3 years. Well, these kind of statistics worry me. I look at people every week with cancers and say, I've got nothing more to treat your disease. I don't want to do that anymore.
Dr. Blumberg, what about that vitamin C being liked by tumors problem? And what about the vitamin E study? I think they were studying it to see if it helped prevent prostate cancer, which is one of the reasons I believe men take vitamin E, and they found more of an association.
What was the first question?
The first one was on vitamin C, this idea that tumors like vitamin C.
I think Dr. Agus makes a good point, but I believe what we're talking about now is what healthy people should be doing in terms of their diet and the use of supplements. Once you've been diagnosed with cancer, we're not talking about your needs for normal mm-hmm. nutrition now. You need to seriously reconsider both your diet, your use of supplements, and be careful that there's no interactions between the drug therapies you're getting and the dietary supplements you may be taking. So I think that's a different issue. I don't think there's any evidence that suggests that vitamin C causes cancer, but should you get cancer, then Dr. Agus is right. There can be the potential for adverse effects. With regard to the most recent clinical trial called the SELECT study that looked at vitamin E and selenium that was given in order to prevent prostate cancer in older men, the outcome was actually null. The suggestions that there was an increase in prostate cancer turned out not to be with vitamin E. Turned out they showed that, and then 3 years later they looked again, and they did not find that increase. But I would also stress that not every study, even not every clinical trial, always agrees with one another, because you have to look what nutrient, what dose, what form, and what population they're being given in. The reason the government invested $250 million in this huge study of supplemental selenium and vitamin E with prostate cancer is because there had been three previous clinical trials showing that selenium had a benefit, and one showing that vitamin E had a benefit. So they said, we need to get better evidence. But they actually used different doses and a different form of vitamin E and selenium in this study. I'm not arguing that this study had a null outcome, but I would point out that other studies suggest that these nutrients may, in fact, have a benefit in this condition.
And the chance of cardiovascular adverse effects from vitamin E, Dr. Blumberg, do you see any cause for concern based on what's been reported?
No, I actually see none. The extent that I've seen some suggestions in some studies, I've never seen them repeated in another study. The idea that vitamin E might cause congestive heart failure, which was shown in one study, has never been found in any other study that has ever been done with vitamin E. And so when I see that kind of evidence where there's no consistency and no reproducibility, I'm a little skeptical that those values are true. But in the study, that particular one that I just mentioned, that was called the HOPE study, I think it's really important to look. These were people who had diabetes and heart disease. They weren't healthy people to start with. And in fact, some people with a particular genotype showed a real benefit from the vitamin E supplement.
Dr. Agus?
Yeah, I mean, again, I can't argue with the data. And the data are that if you look at men over 50 countries, 35,000 men, there's an increased incidence of prostate cancer in people who took this higher dose of vitamin E. And so I look at that and say, yes, there may be some smaller studies. And the reason the government spent that much money is there were some smaller studies that had some possible benefit. So they did the definitive large randomized study, which showed no benefit and harm. And the study was actually halted midstream because of the harm. So I look at that and say, listen, until there's really a study shown that's well done, randomized study, don't take these pills.
All right.
So I just have to make a clarification. That SELECT study that you're referring to, Dr. Agus, was not stopped because of any harm being noticed. It was stopped because there was no evidence after 5 years that there was going to be a benefit after 10 to 12 years, which was the length of the original study design. I'm just not convinced, and with all of the other studies that were done, there was another study with vitamin E in 15,000 men. They saw no evidence of any increase in prostate cancer or any other form of cancer. The study that you're referring to, the SELECT study, seemed to be unusual to me in that population of men that were studied, there should have been, based on national averages, about 175 to 200 deaths due to prostate cancer. In fact, they found only one. So this seemed to be a group that's particularly at a low risk for prostate cancer.
We will continue in a minute with Dr. Blumberg and Dr. Agus, and we'll go right to your calls after the break. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay tuned.